292, and Shmos, where this is by Moshe Rabbeinu, where it says, "Vayom anochel ki avichol ki avram ki zav Yaakov, vayaster Moshe panav ki yar ma'abed dolakim." So Moshe hid his face, covered up his face, hid his face. Not clear what the point of that is. So the Ikrim says, "Vazet er v'asma hu mash osu Moshe Rabbeinu shalom b'mara sne, ki b'tchila shechoshav shayed nira da begashmi." Moshe Rabbeinu first thought that this is some sort of physical phenomenon, which is quite unusual, something burning and not being consumed. When he realized that it is something spiritual, so he realized that whatever he saw physically wasn't the reality. And that's why he hid his face. He was scared that by fixating on the physical, he is going to be detracted from understanding the emes. Lefishli yasigu me'adover rak ha'mikrim kegvanim v'oirech v'aroch domeh. Because what you see from a thing physically are simply incidental stuff, the color, the length, and so on and so forth. Meaning as follows, that when a person, whenever we learn about this, about spiritual things, and Kabbalah is actually the primary example of it, the danger is that we become fixated on the physical aspect of it. And it's something that we begin to dwell on the physical details, expressions, descriptions, and that takes away from understanding the Ruchnius. So when a person is learning the part of Torah that's called Nigla, like the Halacha, so the physical details are extremely important. How long is that circuit? How green, this and that. When we learn things about Olam Haba and Leviosan and Chorabar, let's say, and this and that. So when people start getting involved in the details of it, then basically that's taking them away from understanding the message. Leviosan is not tuna, not even salmon. It's whatever it is, it's some sort of oneg ruchni that has been described as a v'yosan. So we need to understand what is the oneg ruchni that's described as v'yosan. But to start having all of these questions about the fish and so on and so forth, it's going in the wrong direction. It's like sometimes when you tell people a parable or some sort of illustration, and people become very fixated on that. They're kids. They sort of forget that this is all simply a parable for something else, a metaphor. And something is true in this part of Torah. So Moshe hid his face because he wanted to focus not on what his eyes would see, but what the understanding of it is. And that's why Chazal said that in the merit of that, he merited seeing the Shekhinah, because seeing the Shekhinah is an experience that the person needs to be able to grasp with his mind rather than with his eyes. Okay, the next pasuk is says, "Vayom Hashem ro'o ra'isis ani ami," and we find a lot of times a verb is doubled in the Torah, sort of a form of language, and the Sfona explains what that form is. V'tam ro'o ra'isi. Omnam Reisi. Ro Reisi means I really saw, or the way they would say it in old and archaic English, indeed I saw. V'zetam amokam b'chol mokam k'she yusam l'keifel. Anytime you have a verb that is repeated, k'moy ola nala, yochol nuchal, k'inyone k'tam omnam l'hoire she'emes kachu, afal pi she'yitin ha'toyen v'yoyma hefech zeh. You repeat the verb when there's a sense that the other person doesn't believe me. It's like if I tell you I swam over the Atlantic Ocean, so the response would be, you got to be kidding. And he said, no, I really did. Or even in colloquial language, you would say, I swam, let me repeat that, I swam across the ocean. In other words, make no mistake about it. Despite the fact that you might be inclined to write it off as a slip of the tongue, I want to tell you it's true. So a repetition of a verb tends to be a reinforcement of a statement that one might have thought is not like that. Kinyan yadati b'ni yadati, like we saw in last week's in Sedra, where Yosef told him, you make a mistake. He says, no, I really do know. Klem Alpish, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, I know it sounds strange that I've seen them suffer, because where are you till now? Klem Alpish, he's a son of Meshav and Sayyik Mashorah, he is a Malter Hasneh. Ve'af Alpish Al-Tzorim Osherik Mashorah Esh B'Sneh. Mikol Makom Lo Yosufa Amitzah Tzorim Zohar Makash Eshach Vem Kmashorah Inyan Basten in Upal. So, I will get back and I will... and I will not destroy them, but I will push them to let out Kaisel. Ki omnam ein hakavana b'makash she'ovei aleihem l'achris noshes ol m'kayman. I'm not interested in destroying the Mitzrayim and having the Jews settle in Mitzrayim. Avla hatzis ol m'yodo shivu m'okamacha. I'm interested in moving the Jews somewhere else. So it's interesting. He's saying, the Sforno here tells us that the metaphor of Asnen and Ukal is actually about the Egyptians. People tend to think that the metaphor is about Klal Yisrael, that no matter how much Klal Yisrael suffers, they still exist and survive, and that seems to be the primary understanding of it. But I see in this Sfarnu, he understands it to mean, let me tell you something, I know how much the Jews have suffered, I will punish the nation that did it rather severely, but I'm not going to destroy them, because I'm not interested in having the Jews stay here settling comfortably in Mitzrayim. I wanted to go. I want them to go further. The next one is an Ikrim, who's going to explain the contrast in the pasuk between Ra'isis and the Ami. Well, Azehoya Neviim Achasidim Kel Yov Rebchinim Adayis also Mevazin Tovus Olam Hazeh. The great ascetics like Kel Yov, Chanir Ben Doisa, they made light of anything good in this world, because it never stays. Nothing that we have in this world sticks around, it keeps changing. What the Rechoshes was for Ruchnias, which stays. So they never understood the physical good to be good, because the physical good never stays around, and it comes and it goes. They were willing to suffer in this world just to get that pleasure of Olam Haba. Because they recognized that the pleasure comes after pain. It seems somehow in nature that things go from extreme to extreme. Things that are opposite somehow come together. Existence only happens after destruction, and destruction after existence. Now, I just want to pause a minute and talk about this. The Maral says this, but Maral says it in a deeper way. Maral speaks a lot about the Churban, the Beis Hamikdash leading to the Binyan and so on. So, The way the Maral seems to say it, I would say as follows. Imagine a person has severe emotional issues, or he's objectively in a very, very difficult place. Now, the body, or the mind, better said, the mind throws up all sorts of temporary, less than optimal defenses or coping mechanisms. So if everybody says, so if I'm a weak student, I'll pretend I'm a good student. I'll say it's the teacher's fault. I'll do this, that, and the other thing. So long as those exist, nothing solid can be built. It's, whatever is taking the place should be there is preventing it from being built. So for instance, if I owned a cottage in Manhattan, when Manhattan was a little village, and then it became this huge city, I can't build a skyscraper on top of a cottage. I've got to demolish it and raise the ground and then start building. Without that, and that's why Sosam Nas Livnos is called creative work, because you must have it in order to have the building. So if a person is still, if a person has all sorts of illusions and sort of coping mechanisms, nothing happens. A lot of times when a person's illusions are dashed and he comes in a crisis, that's when he's ready to have something solid built on it. As long as Klal Yisrael as long as they schlep along, and even if it's they hobble on a very crippled ruchnius, they will not do tshuva, they'll not do right. But once that is gone, and the ground is clear, then they can build. So Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Beis Hamikdash got to a point where you can't fix it. Fixing it to just perpetuate the problem. So Kadosh Baruch Hu raised it. Once it's raised, so Maral, in many contexts, uses this point that Hefsid is the beginning of binyan. No person can stand a void in his life. And if he feels that he has nothing, he'll do something to have something. And that's very positive. He says a little bit more abstract that you see opposites go together, and wherever there's hefset, there's binyan. Vizel der teva havaya shetimotza hefset. Kilo timtza havaya sefrocha hefset tzuros habetze. Vizel der acha hefset tzuros hagerim. This is a point that Sfarim all make, and Kabbalah Sfarim use this point for many things, and Machshava Sfarim, that you look at some very core process in the world, such as plants growing, the plant starts growing only when the seed has totally disintegrated. When the chick comes out, there is no egg left inside. So when all the whatever's in the egg that is supposed to be eaten and gone, everything is gone and becomes a chick now. So here also you have when Klal Yisrael, Hakadosh Baruch Hu said, I've seen that they've reached rock bottom. Now that they've reached rock bottom, we can begin to redeem them. Okay, the next is, this is going to be quite a few shitos about the concept of names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the first time in Chumash, really, where it's something that the Chumash focuses on. And we do have different names of Hashem appearing here and there in other places. They all of them are sort of, yeah, it says Elohim, it says Hashem, it says Kael, and so on. But this is where we have HaKadosh Baruch Hu being asked, when they'll ask me what your name is, could I have a name and an email address and stuff like that, you know, let's introduce ourselves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, my name is Eket, very strange name, we haven't really heard of that name. Okay. So we're going to see a few pieces about it, as much as we have time. The first one is Rabbeinu Bechaya. V'alderech ha-medrash, v'omru li mashmoy, bikesh leidashmoy ha-gadol. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to know God's grand name. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, shmi atem v'kesh leida? You want to know my name? Lefi ma'asai ne'nikra. I am referred to by the activities I do. When I judge the world, I'm called Elohim. When I do war against Hashem, I'm called the Lord of Hosts. So So Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response, the way the Medrash brings it is, I'm referred to by whatever it is that happens. Kavanas hachachamim, v'enshazer ke'ein ribu b'yichud. U'ma'ashe shmoysa, yizbarach rabim, ha'seichel yadeh ki'kulam ne'moron l'bore echot. Ha'v'la'peh eni yochol lichol oysam, v'as asmi la'achas, v'ashe yichol oysam ha'seichel. Ve'kein shmoysa v'is'ala rabim v'isram mishtanim, v'fi'apulos mitzarim ekablam lo mitzir yizbarach. The Bechaya here says the following, and this is very, very fundamental understanding of all of this. There's a lot, many, many Sfarim, Kuzari and so on, they all speak about it. Let's try to get a sense of the point that Bechaya is making. Because the point he's making is really central to what almost everybody else says. When I label something, so I certainly... If I need an odd name just to sort of refer to it, so if I, let's take an absurd, I adopt a cat. I call the cat by name. So I need it for two reasons. First of all, because people try to think of a cat as a person, so they want to be very personal, and they put a lot of thought into what name and so on. The more considerate one's name, maybe after like a grandparent or something, but I give it a name, or I simply need to be able to refer to it as something, and I guess it comes from say the cat or the other cat or this cat or the other, so I call it. This is called, you know, Rose, and this is called Jasmine, and this is called Violet, and so on. Fine, that's a convenience way of looking at it, but. Or we find stars, and a random star, I need a name, so I'll pluck a name out of somewhere, and that's that. But there's another point to it. I need to be able to find a succinct description of something. A name in the sense a one-word caption. That would be the right way of a name that's meaningful. So when I find a phenomena, so a scientist will try to give it a name that he feels expresses its core essence. That's the way a Chacham does things. When Moshe Rabbeinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's your name? The first type of name doesn't begin to be Shayach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Who HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose up a random name, you know, like I'd like to be known as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's absurd. Moshe Rabbeinu asks him, well, what would your favorite name be? I mean, all of the nonsensical in meaning of a name and a favorite name and so on, obviously doesn't mean anything by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's absurd. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to find one word that sums up, what do we mean by a God? For instance, if I say Almighty, I mean something, and that at least gives me some sense. So Almighty would be better than what would I call God? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him as follows: since a name has to be meaningful for you, so my real essence is not something that you can find meaningful. Let's go to the heart of it. The word Yud Kei Vav Kei, or Aleph Hey Yud and a Hey, are core names of God, and we translate it as existence. But what does existence mean? The word existence to us is a meaningless philosophical concept. On a practical level, if something exists, it needs to be touched, seen, smelled, noticed in action minimally. An electron might not smell like anything, it might not, but I can see an electron in action. So for God to be a name that is a meaningful label for me, I have to be able to translate it as something physical. So I can translate it as something physical, But then I run into a problem, because that never is the sum total of what he is. If I say the God who has saved me from X, Y, Z, it's true that God is the one who saved X, Y, Z, but that's a particular aspect of God. God has an infinite amount more aspects of it. So I'm sort of stuck in a dilemma. If I need to translate God into a term that's meaningful to me, so that is only possible by limiting it to different gods at different times. If I am talking about God in his real essence, then it's something which is beyond it. Let's give one more example in a different context. Imagine you shine white light, sunlight, through, instead of using the word white light, let me use the word clear light, through a prism. And out comes a whole bunch of different colors. Now, clear light, we ask somebody what color is clear light, and you stump the person. I can't give it a color. When my kids were young, so like kid, all kids, they would label the taste of food by colors. So anything that tasted cherry, strawberry, etc., was tasted red. Anything that was lemony tasted yellow. The type of kids' things, betam tzahor, betam yarok, betam this. They sort of, you know, that was the way you referred to it. In Hebrew slang, it's sort of is quite common. The one day, Marv made potatoes. I think she had forgotten to put any salt in, or she didn't put salt in because we had guests who couldn't eat salt. Whatever was salt free. And one of my boys was a little kid at the time. Takes a fork full of it, eats it, and then he makes a face and he says, "Ugh!" He says, "This tastes transparent." And it really is a good equation. It's something that for us, what is it? So the reality of sunlight is that it's clear, but that's meaningless to us. We don't have a way to, I can't tell something. So I can break it into parts and I can tell somebody it consists of red and green and blue and so on and so forth. When you shine it on blue, it'll look blue, and green, it'll look green. But then each piece that I do is not the whole. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded to him, if you ask me how to call me, in other words, how am I Nikra, then he says, that you don't have an answer in your language. You have nothing to call me by that would express, because I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I term myself existence, which is the best term to describe his presence. But that term is just not a term that means anything to you. You need to, some type of existence is you, the God who gives, the God who controls, the God who empowers. Those are all different aspects. Those are things you can understand. But if you're trying to have it come together, you can't do that. This is also a reason why, let's take an example, Kabbalah. I mean, if people ask, well, what do I need to have all of this knowledge? Kadosh Baruch Hu does this sphere, that sphere, that thing, other thing. Kadosh Baruch Hu is all-encompassing everything. Yes, that's a much truer statement when you say Kadosh Baruch Hu knows everything, but it's basically a meaningless statement for you. It gives you no ability to grasp anything. Ma'ani af'ata. In the sense, it's supposed to emulate God. It's got to be things that we can emulate. We can't emulate all-inclusiveness, everything. That's God. But if we see it with different from different angles, and we see it appropriately so, and therefore we have bits that are true, but not the whole picture. So that's why the Medrash is right when he told him, I can't give you a name because of your Maisa Nikra. I am described by my actions, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a name that is an appropriate description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is Havaya, but that's a term that's beyond human understanding. Okay, we'll hold it over here.